The Torah content from now through Pesach has been sponsored by the Kofsky family in loving memory of Adira, who loved big ideas and asking big questions. Hello, I'm Rabbi Matt Schneeweiss, and this is the Stoic Jew podcast, where we explore the relationship between Judaism and Stoicism. Today's reading is from Marcus Aurelius' Meditations, Book 4, Paragraph 35, which is a single sentence. All is ephemeral, both what remembers and what is remembered. Or another translation I have says, everything is only for a day, both that which remembers and that which is remembered. It turns out that the word ephemeral, which means, you know, transient or transitory, comes from the Greek word ephemeros, which means lasting only for a day. So the two translations are essentially the same. So the main point here is, this is really the concluding sentence, I think, of this cluster of paragraphs where he's talking about the futility of hoping that you're going to leave a legacy, because no one's going to remember you. And here he's saying that people, both as the subject and object of memory, are will perish into oblivion, right? The as the rememberer and the rememberee, then either way, you're not going to last. So this could be taken in many different directions, obviously, but my mind went to what I think is the most, the most similar pasuk, the most similar verse to this chapter, which is in Koheles, in Ecclesiastes 1:11, which says, "Ein zichron l'rishonim v'gam l'acharonim sheyihyu lo yihye lahem zikaron im sheyihyu l'acharona." There is no memory of the early generations and also the later generations that will be. There will not be a memory of them with those who will come at an even later time. The Mahari Kara explains here. He says, there's no memory of the early generations, for they have already died. And just as it seems like a new world from your own perspective, because you don't remember the years of generations that have gone by, so too, the generation of your children that will arise after you will not be remembered by the generation of your grandchildren who will arise after them. So I think it's interesting how he puts in here the fact that it's, you know, it's like a new world in your eyes, that, you know, we are, again, so egocentric that that we feel like the most real time is now. And the most real generation is our generation. And therefore, how could people not remember us? But then you think about what's happened before, is you don't really remember your grandparents' generation. You just have some vague historical knowledge of it. And then great-grandparents, forget that. And then great-great-grandparents, that's already completely disconnected. So don't be so arrogant as to think that the next generation is going to somehow immortalize you and your and memory of your deeds that you did in this generation, because for them, it's a whole new world. The Rashbam has a different point on this pasuk. He says, so there's no memory of the early generations. The human beings who were created before you in the world, there's no memory of them, for they have already died and their memory has been lost. And also the later generations that come after us in the world, there will be no more memory of them with those who will be at an even later generation. That is to say, at the end of the later generation, for everyone will die and will no longer be remembered. So that part's pretty much the same. But then he says like this, "For if one person dies today, there will never again be born a person like him, since people are not similar to one another. But when other creatures die, there is a memory. For if these die today, similar ones will be born into the world tomorrow. Therefore, the observers can say, this creature is similar to that other individual creature that has passed on from the world. Consequently, there is a memory for other species, but not for man." So that I thought was interesting because he's connecting this to the context in Koheles, which we're not going to go into right now, but he's basically saying that human, other animals, you can say that it's just the same thing being repeated in different iterations that only vary slightly. But with human beings, we're individuals. So when one person dies, that's it. That person will never, ever exist again, and there won't be anything like him. So, it's interesting when you juxtapose that with Marcus Aurelius' thought, because that's really what we want, is we want to be remembered as this unique individual that there was no one like. But that uniqueness just, again, disappears to the sands of time. I mean, it's just interesting that you get the same pasuk that the Mahari Kara ties to being forgotten, and the Rashbam ties to the way that the fantasy expresses itself that Marcus Aurelius is trying to combat. This also reminded me of, I was thinking, when I looked at the word ephemeral and saw that it meant only for a day, I was trying to think, okay, what, I something in my mind came up of like, there's got to be a character in Tanakh that embodies this, So you could say that Hevel, embodies this, because Hevel was killed and didn't leave any trace, and that's why some of the Mefarshim, some of the commentators say that he was named Hevel afterwards because he vanished and didn't leave any trace, and Chazal say the well-known statement about the loss of one life is like the loss of an entire world, which, connects to the Rashbam statement. But I was thinking that there's a character that actually is described literally as ephemeral, character in quotation marks, which is the Kikayon, the gourd or the plant that sheltered Yonah Hanavi. So again, brief recap of the story. This is at the very end of the book of Yonah. Yonah has delivered his message to the city of Nineveh to warn them that if they don't do teshuvah, if they don't change their actions, then God will destroy the city in 40 days. And then he goes and he camps out to wait to see what's going to happen. And he's just he's very resentful about the fact that Nineveh is, given a chance to do tshuva, because if they do tshuva, then they're going, he knows that they're going to destroy the northern kingdom of Israel. So God makes a kikayon, this plant, grow up overnight near him, and it shelters him and protects him from the sun. And then God sends a worm that strikes the plant, and then it withers and dies. And Yonah is very aggrieved at this. So then Hashem uses this as a lesson. He says, it's a Vayomer Hashem. This is in Yonah Dalid, Yud and Yud Aleph, chapter 4, verses 10 and 11. Vayomer Hashem, Ata chasta al hakikayon asher lo amalta bo, v'lo gidato, shebin laila haya ubin laila avad. God said, you were concerned for the kikayon, which you neither labored for nor grew. It appeared overnight and perished overnight. So should I not be concerned for the great city of Nineveh, which contains far more than 120,000 people who don't know their right from their left, as well as many animals? Okay, now, again, we're not going to go into the whole Yonah thing here to understand that in context, but when I was thinking about this in conjunction with the Marcus Aurelius and the Koheles quotations, then I realized it is an interesting thing that, like, God is comparing this plant that Yonah views, Yonah's getting all worked up about, and God's saying, look, it only lasted for one day and one night, and you got bent out of shape for it. But here's an entire city of all of these people, should I not be concerned and have pity on them? And in reality, as Marcus Aurelius has said, I mean, we really are no different than the plant. It's just that, it's a little bit longer, right? Is that we, entire cities, entire empires come into being and then pass away and are completely forgotten from history. So from God's perspective, so to speak, it really, I mean, you can make the argument that it's the same thing. You know, just from our perspective, we feel like the era and the world that we're a part of with our very selves is more intrinsically lasting. I mean, I guess that's what Moshe Rabbeinu means in Tehillim Tzadi Dalet in 90 Pasuk 4, which says, "Ki elef shanim be'enecha kiyom esmol kiyavor vashmura b'layla." He's talking about God's perspective on time, so to speak. He says, "For 1,000 years in your eyes, in God's eyes, are like a yesterday gone by, like a watch in the night." Yeah, so our perspective is very skewed when it comes to the significance of the little blip we make in time. One last thought here, and again, this is loosely related. I've been reading memoirs from Mary Carr, The Liars Club, and Cherry, and then I just read this morning a commencement address she gave at Syracuse University in 2015. And I'm going to read this last portion here with a few light edits, but it's pretty much in her words. So she says, "The opposite of love isn't hate. It isn't even indifference. It's fear. Often fear of the very pain and suffering that we all know is inevitable. Every major religion tells you the solution to your fear is loving other people, and they're not wrong, but they don't talk that much about how truly nerve-wracking everybody is. The people sucking up your subway air, or getting your job, or just standing ahead of you in Starbucks, the fear and rage and resentment you feel for them, or even for yourself, can choke your heart. Fear can take that expensively educated brain of yours and reduce it to the state of a dog crouched over a bone. You know the moments, heart pounding in your ears, sweat bumping down your ribs. Ask yourself at those times, who's noticing how scared you are? To me, it's this watcher or noticer self. That's who I think you really are. That's where your soul is. That's where God comes in. That's a place you can draw strength from. And if I could, I would download into all your brains today a hardwired app that would permit you to observe your own rage and fear from inside that quiet noticer place, to install a button you could push during the bad times and have somebody say in a really convincing voice, "This might be the start of something great that I just can't foresee right now because I'm scared." And if you can get curious about what scares or infuriates you, especially if it's part of yourself, you can get way less scared. So I don't know, that was in my mind because she's talking about the self. When you have this fear and you notice yourself having this fear, that step of realizing that there is a noticer self and then there is the self that's being noticed, that step can be the first step towards liberation from being locked into this like perspective that traps you and locked into that fear. And that's really what Stoicism is doing, you know, throughout its teachings, which is trying to get you to notice your own thought processes and to break you out of that. And I just, you know, couldn't help but think about her statement, Mary Carr's statement about the noticer self and then the self that's being noticed. And then Marcus Aurelius' statement of the self that remembers and the self that is remembered. I think that much of Torah is also trying to cultivate this type of self-awareness where you're looking at yourself as an object of chachma, meaning something that operates based on God's laws, whether the laws of physics or the laws of psychology or whatever it may be, but you're also using chachma to look at yourself. So again, a little bit spiraling off into my own meditations at the end there, but lots to think about from this one line. That is it for today's episode. If you've gained from what you've learned here today and would like to support my production of even more Torah content, please consider contributing to my Patreon at www.patreon.com/RabbiSchneeweiss. Link is in the description. And for those who have not heard, I just started a fifth podcast, which is the Tefillah podcast, tefillah.buzzsprout.com. Link is in the description. And you know, as I always say, I mean, you know, it's really patrons like you that make this possible. If you would like to become a patron, even just for 1 month, even just for $3, then I will certainly appreciate your generosity. New podcasts are always the most expensive to start when I first launch them, because I have to upload all of the content from you know, that has accumulated over the past 4 or 5 months, and that leads to some extra charges. So if you'd like to become a patron, great. If you are a patron, even greater. If you have to stop becoming a patron, no worries. But I just thank everyone for supporting my efforts to make Torah ideas available and accessible to everyone.